You're listening to At Any Rate, J.P. Morgan's Fixed Income Research Podcast, where we take a look at the story behind some of the biggest trends, themes, and emerging developments in bond markets today. Hello, this is Alex Rover, head of U.S. interest rate strategy at J.P. Morgan. With summer over, markets have reawakened once again. September in the bond markets has a way of quickly making up for slow summer days, often bringing a renewed sense of urgency that August days just can't seem to reflect. Post-Labor Day, market activity has definitely gotten busier. There's plenty of new supply for both treasuries and corporates. Markets are focused on the FOMC and its September 22nd meeting, as well as the return of Congress and what that means for the infrastructure bills and the debt limit. That being said, we think it's worthwhile to dig into a few evolving topics of importance to the interest rate markets. I'm joined today by Jay Berry, head of U.S. government bond strategy. Jay, what's been going on in treasuries lately, and what do you think about where we're headed for as the fall, as we get further into the fall?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Alex. And honestly, it's been a pretty sleepy summer in rates. So we saw yields decline pretty sharply coming out of the more hawkish than expected June FOMC meeting. But for the last 2 months or so, we've been firmly entrenched in about a 20 basis point range, of which yields are basically in the middle of that range right now. And that's been the tightest range that we have seen really since the latter part of the summer of 2020. But as we return and as we look ahead to the fall, it appears to us that treasuries remain priced for decidedly subtrend growth over the coming year. We've been talking about this dynamic since the early part of the summer, but the framework that we use for long-term treasury yields, which views yields through the lens of Fed policy expectations and forward guidance, as well as growth and inflation expectations, it shows that long-term yields right now are trading more than 20 basis points below their model implied fair value. To be fair, you know, this framework reverts with mean reverts with relatively low frequency, but this is one of the largest gaps that we've observed in recent years. And when we flip this on its head, the divergence is large enough that long-term treasury yields at these levels, we think, would only be justified if we were to lower our own growth forecast by close to 2 to 3 percentage points over the course of the next year, which would imply relatively flat real GDP growth over the next 12 months. So we think at least some of this gap stems from the spread of the Delta variant in the U.S. But that being said, we're seeing some early signs that this wave of infections is cresting, as the 7-day average of new cases has declined from its peak at the beginning of September, and the effective reproduction number, as our economists estimated, has declined back to 1 from a peak over 1.3 in early August. Thus, if these trends hold, any drag on activity should be relatively short-lived, and we continue to forecast significantly above-trend growth into 2022. As a result, we think that the spread of the Delta variant should have a more limited impact on U.S. growth. And we think against the backdrop of these rich valuations that there's room for yields to rise from current levels. And we continue to project 10-year yields moving to 1.75% by the end of this year.
What about positioning? In addition to the Delta concerns we've talked about, it seems the unwind of bearish positions may have played a role in keeping yields pinned. What does positioning look like now?
I think you're absolutely right. There was a substantial amount of short covering that occurred this summer. And we look at our Treasury client survey. At its peak, 50% of respondents responded short, and that was just prior to the June FOMC meeting. Now, with half of respondents responding short, that was the largest share that we have seen since the Fed was actually tightening back in 2017-2018. Since that peak in early June, that's been cut by about half. And now we've seen these bearish positions increase once again recently, but they're well off their shortest levels since earlier in the summer. Nonetheless, we do recognize that with resting positions still somewhat bearish, that any short covering here would certainly lend itself to lower yields.
Okay, so what other risks should we be considering in rates? I mean, the debt ceiling legislation lapsed at the end of July, and Congress has yet to pass new legislation. Is this a risk as we head further into the fall?
You know, this is something that's been coming back to the forefront for market participants for the past week or so, and we definitely think it's something to consider. From our perspective, it doesn't appear that Congress will fashion a debt ceiling solution over the very near term, and it's likely that this debate leaks into the summer, getting closer to what we call the drop-dead date for a potential technical default. You know, the work that we've done shows that Treasury has enough extraordinary measures and cash on hand to last through to the end of October before risking a technical default. And moreover, we know that Congress has a lot of balls in the air right now. The bipartisan infrastructure package has been passed by the Senate, but the House will not take this up for a vote until later this month when they return from recess. Moreover, congressional leadership continues to debate the size and the scope of what will be included in the $3.5 trillion budget resolution passed by the House late last month. Finally, Congress needs to pass a new continuing resolution to authorize spending for fiscal year 22, which begins at the beginning of October, else we risk a government shutdown. Amid all this, the debt ceiling has taken a back seat, and it's concerned investors that negotiations will run into October, drawing nearer to that drop-dead date that we talked about before.
How concerned should we really be about a technical default, and what are the ramifications if we get to one?
So we really think the risks around a technical default are very low, to be clear, but we understand that this debate will probably drag into the fall. And now I think we probably need to remind our listeners that a technical default would occur when Treasury would miss a coupon or principal payment on an outstanding obligation, but where the delay is very short term, call it less than a few days, and is not viewed by the market as reflecting a real deterioration in the solvency of the U.S. Though such a default would be brief, the impact on financial markets, we think, could be lasting. And given the experience of the debt ceiling debate a decade ago in 2011, we think it's very, very, very unlikely, but it could impact the financial markets in three ways. First, we think this would likely impact the sovereign ratings of the U.S. We all know that S&P downgraded the United States in August of 2011 to reflect concerns over policymaking, but the other ratings agencies have maintained the U.S. at their top rating. And any default, though brief, would likely result in a ratings downgrade, we think. Some of the prior work that we've done in publications in the past have shown that there have been four other grace period defaults, as we call them, in recent history. And in each case, the default was accompanied by a ratings downgrade. So that's something to consider. Second, a technical default would probably impair demand for treasuries. So foreign ownership has declined from its peak earlier the last decade. But nevertheless, the international community still owns nearly a third of the treasury market. And even if a technical default is cured immediately, we think that foreign demand for treasuries could be inversely impacted. And there's precedent for this as well. When the GSEs were moved into conservatorship in the fall of 2008, this led to permanently lower foreign demand for GSE debt. As a result, we do think a technical default could result in weaker foreign demand, which over the longer term could result in higher treasury yields. And now the final impact we think is on the financing markets. The repo market plays a very pivotal role in maintaining liquidity in fixed income markets, particularly in treasuries. It allows the dealers to finance long positions and source securities for setting shorts in order to perform their function as market makers. And now we know repo secured by treasury collateral amounts to about $1.6 trillion right now, and that comprises about 75% of the total repo market. A sharp repricing of treasury collateral in response to a potential technical default would likely increase haircuts, we think, potentially leading to a significant margin calls, some forced deleveraging, and a decline in lending capacity. So I think those are the three things that we need to look out for, Alex, which a technical default could impact in the treasury market.
Thanks for laying that out, Jay. But I mean, if the markets are really concerned about how Congress is handling the debt ceiling, what will they be looking for?
I think there are two things we should watch, Alex. First, the short end of the curve is a great barometer for the market's concerns. Traditionally, short-end investors like money market funds have shied away from buying treasuries which mature close to the potential technical default date. T-bills which mature in the second half of October, around this drop-dead date for a potential technical default, they've begun to underperform relative to surrounding issues in recent weeks. And to be clear, the underperformance has really been modest so far, but if form holds, we think there's room for these tenors to underperform further, given the experience of prior debt ceiling episodes, because this has been a pretty consistently observable phenomenon over the last five or six episodes. That being said, we think the dynamics are likely to be more muted this time around than we've seen in the past, and that largely owes to supply-demand factors. We know that T-bill net issuance this year has been over negative $950 billion year-to-date, and that the supply of high-quality, shorter-maturity assets remain pretty scarce, and that's evident in the high RRP usage that you've spent a lot of time talking about. So we think that the moves are likely to be more muted than what we saw in either the 2011 or the 2013 episode. That's the easiest place to watch. And away from that, we think the other place to watch is the long end of the curve as well. We've observed that there's been pretty diverse reaction functions to long-term treasury yields around the increase in debt ceiling negotiations in the past, and there were muted reactions in the last two episodes in 2017 and 2019. But that makes sense to us because Congress managed to pass new legislation at least a month prior to the prospective drop dead date in either of those two episodes. However, when some of the work that we've done looks back at 2011, 2013, and 2015, when those debt limit negotiations came down to the wire, and only passed days before a potential drop dead date for a technical default, we found that Treasury yields declined net of the changes in the market's Fed and inflation expectations. And 2011, I think, as we all know, is a standout example about what happened then. Thus, knowing that the House is not back in session for another week from now, and that Congress does have a number of legislative balls in the air, we think it's likely that these negotiations leak late into September, if not beyond that, running the risk that this lack of actions leads Treasury yields to actually decline as risk aversion increases. So we haven't seen that yet, but it's definitely something to watch out for as September proceeds.
That's really helpful, Jay. So in sum, should the current wave of COVID infections subside and have a limited impact on growth, there is room for yields to move higher. But the confidence about this will take time to emerge. We'll also have to watch, you know, pretty closely the latest developments in D.C. as the Senate and the House return from their summer recess, just to see how the debt ceiling negotiations evolve. With that, I'll say thanks to everybody for listening today. Stay tuned for more episodes of, at any rate, J.P. Morgan's Global Research Podcast Series. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read J.P. Morgan research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2021, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on September 13th, 2021.